Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the doctrine of parens patrae, the parent-child relationship, when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant people in the world. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, against our privacy, and against our property by these powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But you and I do not have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. And the courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property, not the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for example, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to someone who is indifferent thereto? And that's because it is a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor, and it is valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. Now, that's a direct citation from U.S. versus Johnson, and that's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and a whole lot less to the politicians and the lawyers and the bureaucrats. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, which deals with your rights, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to the website georgegordon.org, then click on to the email, and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, it's free of charge. Do it right now before you forget it. Let's click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about Dr. Everett Sullivan. Sullivan did a speech back in 1983 to some Baptist congregation someplace explaining what happened when you got a license. Well, he learned the hard way what those of us that have spent a little time researching law, going to law school, learned from the literature, and that's exactly right. A license is permission to do something that is illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. A license is prima facie evidence of a crime in commission. If you have a license in your pocket, it is the prima facie evidence that you are a criminal. Your driver's license is the prima facie evidence that you're involved in criminal activity and that you have been given special dispensation by the state to conduct that criminal act. Because without the license, your activities would be a tort or trespass against somebody. I don't have a driver's license because I don't want to commit any torts or trespasses against anybody. So I didn't go to the state to get permission to commit a tort or trespass against you. When you got a marriage license, you were seeking permission to break a law. When you got your business license, partner, you were asking the state for permission to break a law. I'll bet you that you don't even know what law you wanted to break or where that law was located. I'll bet you you couldn't find that law at high noon with both hands and a roadmap. But the very definition of a license is permission to commit a crime. A license, by definition, is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. Every license violates the law of God to some degree for some purpose. Everybody with a license in his pocket is a criminal. You went to a foreign and alien God to get permission to violate the laws of the God of Abraham. Now, of course, it's your choice. You know, you got a right to make that choice. In fact, the God of Abraham gave you that command. He told you in Deuteronomy 30, wake up, smell the coffee, and choose. Make your choice this day. Follow me and my law, or go follow Baal and his law. One or the other. Well, for most Americans, we've made our choice, and we're following Baal and sun worship, and we're happy as clams at high tide. Now, of course, there's some side effects that come from that. I mean, that's like taking a drug, you know. Oh, that's like drinking, you know, a little heavy, you know, on Friday night or Saturday night or something like that, and you wake up with a hangover, you know, and you say, woo, I think I drank a little too much last night. Well, that's a side effect from overindulgence. Those of us that have experienced that a time or two, you know, woke up a little bit and said, gosh, I think next time I go to the party, I'll drink a little less. You know, maybe I'm taking a little too much of that drug. Well, over in Tennessee, we're talking about Everett Sullivan last night and licenses over here. Well, over in Tennessee, we read from the 1945 edition of the Tennessee Law Review, on common law marriage in Tennessee. Now, listen to this story. Marriage has been defined by the Tennessee Supreme Court as follows. Okay, now here's your Tennessee Supreme Court. Here's what marriage is, boys and girls. It, marriage, is something more than a contract. It's a contract, all right, but it's something more than a contract. I mean, it's bigger and more better and more grandiose than any contract you've ever gotten involved in. It is rather to be deemed an institute of society. It is founded upon the consent and the contract of the parties, and in this view, it has some peculiarities in its nature, character, operation, and the extent of obligation different from what belong to ordinary contracts. Period. Who? Did you get that? Hey, this marriage contract, this marriage license is a contract, all right, but it's an extraordinary contract. Hey, when you went down there and signed up, when you walked into the marriage license bureau, you said, hey, dude, whip on this marriage license to us, would you? Did the guy say, hey, hang on there, partner. Did you know this is an extraordinary contract and it has some side effects that maybe you ought to be aware of? You know, people that are going in here to get a marriage license are in heat. Last thing in the world they're interested in is rational dialogue over the terminology of the legal contents of a legal document. These people are in distress. All they want is satisfaction. Hell, they would sign over their inheritance. You wouldn't even have to give them a bowl of lentils. They'd just give it to you. Free. Just give us the license so we can go out and diddle. Now it goes on to tell us a little more. Unlike other contracts, it is indissoluble between the parties. When it is consummated according to law, it is of perpetual obligation and it cannot be renounced at the will of either or both parties, period. Woo! You talk about a contract. Now listen to this. Did you catch that? Did you catch that? Unlike other contracts, it's indissoluble between the parties. I mean, you can't dissolve this contract once you've entered into it. Now, how would you like to sign a contract with me, little Georgie Gordon? And I'm going to put a clause in there that this contract is indissoluble between the parties. Hey, you talk about an extraordinary contract. Well, how are we going to dissolve this contract then? If you and I can't dissolve the contract, who can? Next sentence. It continues to exist until a dissolution is pronounced either by the death of one of the parties or by a divorce. So either you have to die, I have to die, or we have to go to our third party, the state, to get a divorce. And the rights and duties growing out of it are not left to the option or agreement of the parties, but to some extent are matters of municipal regulation over which the will of the parties can have no control. Did you get that? The will of the parties have no control. It's a matter of municipal regulation. It's a matter of state authority. Emphasis added, of course. Now, you went down here and you signed a three-party limited general partnership between the boy, the girl, and the state, over which you, the boy, and the girl have absolutely no control. The state can dissolve this contract. You got to go to the state to get the state to dissolve it, and it's called a divorce, or one of you can die. It's the only way you can terminate it. Now, boys and girls, you talk about a contract now. I mean, that's a contract. Are you really sure that you want a contract with some nameless, faceless bureaucrat over in Nashville, Tennessee, or Jefferson City, Missouri, or Washington, D.C., or Sacramento, California? Some guy that you never met, don't know, didn't elect, couldn't vote for, and probably couldn't find if you had a roadmap at high noon with his name and address on it. You probably couldn't find that sucker who's in charge of your marriage. But he makes the rules, he makes the terms and conditions, and get this, your legislature acts every session to some degree upon that marriage license contract. You went in 30 years ago, boys and girls, and got a marriage license, and every year for the last 30 years, your legislature has been adding, subtracting, multiplying, and dividing, and making law and rescinding law concerning that contract. Did they ever send you a letter and say, oh, by the way, we inserted this phrase in paragraph 9 on page 6, line 24. You ever get notice about how the changes were made? You don't need to. You see, you already gave your power of attorney to the legislature when you got the marriage license. Power of attorney. Declared yourself to be legally incompetent. And of course, you don't need to be too concerned about your legal incompetence because you appointed a guardian over your marriage who has some kind of letter behind his name. He's a professor. He's a paid professional. Hell, he's smarter than God. God doesn't have, God does not have any letters behind his name. Isn't that just real special? So some professor in some college who writes up these proposed changes and legislation that goes before the legislature and is written up and made law, he's a pretty smart dude. And you signed on to it, and it's by your own agreement, it's by your own hand. It's like joining the army and then claiming to be a conscientious objector. I mean, you talk about an oxymoron now. But it gets better. Marriage is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order and morality. Did you get that? This is the Supreme Court of Tennessee says marriage is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order and morality, and it constitutes the chief cornerstone of the whole structure of civilized society. You know, a statement like that makes me want to puke. And I'll bet you those boys over there at the Supreme Court actually believe that line of crap. Listen to this. It is an institution. I don't deny that. That's true. It lies at the very foundation of all social order. Boy, that's the truth. Social order. It lies at the foundation of socialist order. It reminds me of It Takes a Village, written by Hillary Clinton, or ghostwritten by somebody else. I doubt if Hillary Clinton wrote the book. And that's exactly what a socialist would tell you. Hey, look, moms and dads, you know, mothers and fathers, the creators of these babies, they can't raise these children. I don't deny that. I think America is made up of boys and girls that are totally incompetent, and they probably do need a guardian. That's why they get marriage licenses, because they need a guardian, the state, with their paid professionals with letters after their names to guide them. You know, people like social lady, parole man, juvenile justice judge. I imagine that those people do need a guardian. Occasionally, though, you run into somebody that thinks that he's competent and capable enough of managing his own marital affairs. I'm one of those. I don't have a marriage license. I got a wife and no marriage license. Can you believe it? I've got children with no birth certificates. Can you believe that? I know it's wild and off the wall, but I woke up one day and I says, gosh, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could become legally competent, and maybe I could become a real father, and gosh, maybe I could become a parent, and gosh, maybe I could raise my own children without any help from paid professionals, you know, like social lady. I know it's a wild step, but, you know, think about it. And then they tell us that it is the foundation of all social order and morality. 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 Did you hear that? Morality comes from where? The state. Oh, my God. Give me a break, would you? Listen, the IRS took over Mustang Ranch here a few years back. Mustang Ranch, for all of you novices out there and virgins from Hollywood, is a whorehouse in Pershing County, Nevada. A whorehouse. The IRS took it over. That's a government agency. They operated it for 17 months and then sold it for a profit. And you're telling me that the government is the place where we go for the source of morality? Oh, my God. Spare me, would you? Have we taken leave of our senses? The state, an amoral state, running a whorehouse and funding abortion, and you're telling me that this is the source of morality? And then the bastards come along and prohibit and outlaw polygamy. You know, of course, in the name of morality. But then what the hell does God know about marriage, polygamy, or morality, huh? Oh, well, the God of the United States and probably the God of Nevada and the God of California probably are smarter than the God of Abraham. And, of course, most Americans believe that and practice that. But, you know, there's a few of us out here, you know, that look at this and say, my God, you got to be pulling my leg. And this is the Supreme Court of Tennessee. These guys ain't dummies, you know. They've all got letters after their names, too. Then they went on and they added to that and they said on another occasion, our Supreme Court speaking of a common law marriage. That's what I've got. I've got one of those common law marriages. Some guy said to me, well, you don't have a real marriage. That's just a pretend. That's just a sham marriage. Huh. I didn't know that. I did not know that a common law marriage was just a pretend sham marriage. My great-granddaddy Snyder had a common law marriage. It made me wonder, just where in the hell did people get their marriage licenses 1,000, 2,000, or 3,000 years ago? Where in the hell did Adam and Eve go to get their marriage license? Did they just have a sham marriage? Just pretending, huh? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Daniel, and all those guys just had pretend marriages, huh? We're all bastards because our forefathers, they didn't have the state legislature of Missouri to create marriage licenses. I bet you the average Joe Sixpack in America couldn't even tell me when the first marriage license came into force in the United States. Well, it was in Illinois in 1876, boys and girls. I looked it up. Illinois, 1876, pursuant to the 14th Amendment, enacted in 1871. So what in the hell were Americans doing before 1871, before we had the 14th Amendment, huh? They were practicing common law, sham, pretend marriages. Anyway, with that out of the way, the Supreme Court of Tennessee says of common law marriages, quote, no particular form was required to be observed by the parties entering into it. A simple agreement by a man and woman that they would live together as man and wife constituted a valid marriage. All right. Well, I got a wife here, and she and I agreed one with the other that we would live together as man and wife, and that's called the pretend sham common law marriage. That's the way we've been doing it for the last 4,000 years, boys and girls, in Anglo-Saxon administration, without marriage licenses. It was done before, it's being done today, and it will be done in the future. And there's a few of us that still do that. There's a few people out, not many, but there's still a few that do not need social lady or probation man or juvenile probation officer to regulate our marriages for us. We think that we're able to do it ourselves. Now, they went on to say that the common law form, which existed in England and in some of the states in the earlier development of our nation, due to the vast space, difficult traveling facilities, and the scarcity of squires, has been abrogated in many states today, including Tennessee, by statute. So the legislature of Tennessee just said, we're going to abolish common law marriage. Okay. That's nothing new. Hey, listen, legislatures have been abolishing, amending, and repealing the laws of God and Moses for 3,400 years, boys and girls. So don't be surprised if your legislature enacts some new piece of legislation and abolishes some other facet or factor of the law of God. But I just wanted to tell you, you can't do that. It's against the law. And there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And that there is a God out there, as obscure as he might be, but there's a God out there, and every now and again he goes ballistic. He went ballistic in Noah's flood, and he went ballistic out at the Red Sea against the Egyptian army. Killed 450,000 of those boys in one afternoon in about 20 minutes. And I would contend that given this God the finger is probably not one of our smarter moves here in the Western Anglo-Saxon countries. And I'm talking to you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders, along with the British and Americans. I don't think that that was our brightest move, but don't let me get in the way now of your happiness and success. But I just want to report to you, because of the volume of people who call the law school complaining about social lady taking their kids away from them, or they're complaining about the school marm over here, complaining about them not sending their kid to public school, or they're calling here saying, well, how do I get my children away from that whore of their mother, you know, and that happens once in a while. Sometimes you get some ladies out here, they're a little promiscuous, and then you get righteous, indignant husbands over here that say, well, she's a whore, and she's out here, you know, the mother of my children, and she's got custody of them, and I want to get them away from her, and things like that happen. Now, keep in mind now that Tennessee just abrogated common law marriage by statute. They just woke up one day and said, hey, we're just going to abolish the law of God here as it relates to marriage. Okay, boys, well, the statutes dealing with this subject, according to Vernier, fall into five classes. Those that specifically validate common law marriages, that's one. Those that set out laws requiring a definite procedure to be followed to be married, that's two. And then declare common law marriages, let's see if I got this right here. Those that specifically validate common law marriages, one. Those that set out laws requiring a definite procedure, that's two. But saying nothing about common law marriages, and then those, number three, those that specifically declare common law marriages invalid, such as Tennessee. Four, those that may, those that say that some technicality in the performance of the requirements will not invalidate the marriage, that's four. And then five, those that have been construed by the courts to be mandatory, thereby invalidating such marriages. All right, now there's five. Now, Tennessee is placed in this last category by all of the authorities. Our statutes require that a license must issue from the county in which the female resides or where the marriage is solemnized, and the parties must declare in the presence of a minister or officer that they accept each other as man and wife. The parties must be of a certain age. A recital of the performance of the ceremony must be endorsed on the back of the license, and the license must be returned to the county of origin. Okay? That's a statutory marriage in Tennessee. It's the way it has to be done there. Well, I was married in Texas. Texas is a common law state. There are still, seven or eight states in the United States that recognize common law marriages, and I'm from one of them. Even if that weren't the case, I still would have a common law marriage. And I would still practice the law of Moses and the law of God, because God told us that we ought to obey God rather than men. And he said that in Acts 5, verse 29. That's New Testament theology, so all you Baptists can subscribe to that. We ought to obey God rather than men. And then there's a little more to it. Jesus said that man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And when he said that in Matthew 4:4, not a single word of the New Testament had been written down yet. So we're not talking New Testament theology. He said every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, which includes all of the Old Testament, boys and girls, the only scriptures that were available on the day he said that. And in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, it says plainly that we are not to add to or subtract from this law that we got from God through Moses. We're not to add a jot or a tittle to that law, not even a dotted I or a crossed T. And the Tennessee Supreme Court has the gall to come in here and say, well, we just abrogated the law of God by statute. We just made our own law. We are gods here in Tennessee. Well, they're not the only place that there are gods. The Californians did the same thing, and the Floridians and the New Yorkers and you know, the Massachusetts guys, everybody in the country, everybody in the United States has done the same thing. But unfortunately, boys and girls, there are some side effects. Now, here's an affidavit that I got from one of my students. Let me tell you this little story here. One of my students, you know, he's sitting here in class, And I'm telling him the story. He's reading the Tennessee Supreme Court. He's reading Everett Sullivan's story. He is reading from American jurisprudence. He's in chapter 43 of the tax school, which deals with marriage, and chapter 44, which deals with divorce. We're talking about community property. We're talking about the income tax. And I told him the story that I'm telling you right now. And he looked at me like, Gordon, you got to be a space case. You got to be so far off the wall and out to lunch that you're never going to see daylight. Now, this boy was from Texas, so he went down to Austin. That's the state capital of Texas. For all you people that are non-Texans, didn't know that. Went down to Austin, Texas. And he ran into a guy by the name of Maddox, Jim Maddox, who in 1989, on the 27th of June, 1989, was the Attorney General of Texas. And here's what Mr. Jim Maddox said. Here's the affidavit. It's signed by about, oh, let me count them. I'll give you the number here. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. 18 signatures with 18 addresses on an affidavit signed by 18 people. And this guy asked Jim Maddox. It says, we, the undersigned, do hereby affirm that we are knowledgeable and able to testify to the following. On Monday, May 19th, 1986, this question was put to Mr. Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of the state of Texas. Quote, is it true that the state of Texas owns our children? Unquote. That's the question. Is it true, Mr. Maddox, that the state of Texas owns our children? Mr. Maddox responded, quote, yes, it is true. And not only your children, but you too. Unquote. This exchange took place in the Attorney General office parking area at approximately 5:30 p.m. The affiant hereby affirm that the foregoing is true and accurate report. Further affiant saith not. And it's notarized by Mr. Gary Paul Prentice, Notary Public, 62789, signed by 18 Texans. Isn't that just special? God, I thought that'd just make your day. That's just in case, you know, you thought, hey, you know, Gordon, I think that you're kind of off the wall here. All I'm telling here, boys and girls, is what the Attorney General of Texas told these 18 people. Yeah, the state of Texas owns your children, and the state of Texas owns you too, Mom and Dad. They get title to you the same way that they get title to your children, through the birth certificate. All right, now here's the County of Shasta Department of Health Services Agency, the Department of Public Health, Fred Johnson, the director. And it's addressed to Ms. Nancy Robinson, 215 South 3rd Street, Dunsmuir, California, 96025. It says, Dear Ms. Robinson, as I understand it, you gave birth to twin girls on July 30, 31, 1985 at Mercy Medical Center of Redding, California. And I also understand from the hospital staff that you did not desire to register the birth of your girls with them at this time. So I'm writing to inform you of information that you may be unaware of. This lady here, Nancy Robinson, is one of my students. This is back in the 1980s. She went into the hospital in Redding, California. She gave birth to twin girls and then told the nurse to take that birth registration crap and stick it where there's no daylight. I know it's un-American and it's kind of crazy, but this lady is kind of crazy, and she said, I don't want a birth certificate for my children. You ever heard of such a thing? I mean, that woman's got to be a terrorist. She's got to be some kind of a right-wing lunatic reactionary fringer of some kind that needs to be locked up in the mental hospital. What do you mean? You go to a hospital, have babies, and then tell the nurse that you ain't filling out this crap for a birth certificate. All right, well, here's what you might not have known. And so the Department of Public Health is informing my student, she's married. Her name was Mrs. Nancy Robinson when I knew her. She wasn't a Ms., she was a Mrs. She was married. Those girls aren't bastards. Those girls aren't illegitimate. And then she went on to say, and this is the state. According to state regulations, if you do not register your daughter's birth within the first year of their delivery, they would then have to be registered on a delayed registration of birth form, and the cost would be at this time $15. Considering the fact that you delivered in a hospital and had a physician in attendance, this would probably be of no consequence or trouble for you now. But in later years, this may be a problem for your daughters. Those girls are 20 years old now. This was written on August 6, 1985. These girls were born on July 30, 31, 1985, July 30, 31, 2005. These two girls are 20 years old today. As far as I know, they did not die. They did not get some horrible disease because they do not have a birth certificate. Now, I'm sure you're aware of the utmost importance in having a birth certificate as soon as possible. In 20 years, the hospital records could have been destroyed and your physician may not be available to help you or your girls. Consider this fact, that in order to be registered for school, apply for marriage license, grants, or scholarships in school, the state of California requires a certified copy of a birth certificate. The federal government requires a certified copy of a birth certificate when applying for military service, passports, or a social security card. All the things that you don't want, shouldn't have, and ought to run away from. Social Security, passport, contracts with bail, military service. Who in the hell in his right mind wants to join the army and go to Iraq to make the world safer? ExxonMobil, for crying out loud. My God, these two girls won't be able to join the army and go to Iraq. They won't be able to go to school. I imagine these girls are 20 years old today, never spent a day in school. They're just as dumb as a box of rocks, never been educated because they didn't have a birth certificate. I mean, come on, boys and girls. Surely we got to be smarter than this, don't we? Now, when you realize this is Linda Allen from the Department of Public Health in Redding, California. This is Shasta County. When you realize all of the times that they may need their certificate of birth, you may want to contact me and we can arrange to have them taken care of for you. Please contact me if you have any other questions in this matter. Well, these girls grew up to be adults without birth certificates. Now, there's not very many people in America that do that, but these two girls did. And they're a leg up on those of you that have birth certificates. They have constitutional rights that you with birth certificates do not have. That's right. These two girls are not owned by the state of California. Not that most people care one way or the other who owns them, but these two girls are not owned by the state of California. But everybody else that has a birth certificate is owned by the state of California, and Mr. Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of Texas, says so. And Mr. Jim Maddox is exactly correct. Okay, we got to take a little break here. I got to give you a reminder. I'm 6 minutes behind schedule here, so let me tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact desk. If you want more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. I couldn't find georgegordon.org with both hands at high noon with a roadmap if my life depended on it. But if you can, that's where you can find the information. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Remember that free introductory CD package? Free of charge. Be sure to write for it, or call us direct, 417-273-4967, or go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. So don't blame the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station for all of the insanity and crazy ideas that you hear on this program. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. It's an easy one, George Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N. Sometimes people write here and say, I can't find George Gordon anywhere. Well, how do you spell that? Well, I spell it G-O-R-D-E-N, G-O-R-D-I-N, G-O-R-D-A-N. Okay, that's getting close. It's G-O-R-D-O-N, D-O-N, Gordon, D-O-N, .org. And you, too, can tune in to the webpage. I'm not computer literate, and I hire people with PhDs and other letters after their names to operate our computer system here, and then I just pay them good money, and they do a good job. After all, my excuse is I'm a high school dropout. How in the hell would I know how to use a computer? But then I don't have to. I've got somebody that knows something to do it for me. Hey, I'm looking at another piece of paper here. Let me show you something about privacy. You know, oftentimes you hear me talk about privacy and business and privacy. You know, people complain. They call the law school, and they're concerned about their privacy. Well, there's nobody following you around with a clipboard writing down the activities that you're engaged in. If you're concerned that your government knows too much about you because somebody's following you around, some FBI agent or some CIA guy, you know, some spook is following you around and writing all this down, that's not so. They don't have to. See, they sent you to public school and they trained you to confess. I mean, you people are just like a bunch of Catholics out here going to confession on Thursday night. There isn't anything that your government wants to know about you that you haven't told them or won't tell them if they ask. I mean, you know, the average Joe Sixpack, when you ask him something, he'll tell you. I remember one time I was conducting a school, and we were talking about the Fourth Amendment. And a student, about second or third night of school. We used to teach the school in a six-week program up at the Mardi Gras in Boise, down on South 9th Street. And this young fella came in. He worked for a Boise Cascade out at their wholesale yard out at the airport. And I knew this guy. And when I worked at Atlantis, you know, I used to go out there to the wholesale yard and buy truckloads of plywood and truckloads of lumber. And I knew this guy personally. Well, it just so happens that when I left the business world and I went into the teaching business, why, this young fellow had heard about our school, that those in those days called Barrister's Inn, from Boise, Idaho, Barrister's Inn. And so he enrolled in the school and his courtroom strategy and procedure. And He came in about the third night of school. Now, we used to operate the school in the evenings from 7 to 10 for 6 weeks, 5 nights a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. In 3 hours, that was 15 hours a week for 6 weeks. 15, 30, 45, 60, 75, 90 hours of on-the-job instruction and training. He comes in about 3 days late, and we're talking about the Fourth Amendment, your right to be secure in your person, houses, papers, and effects. And as it relates to birth certificates and marriage licenses and your marriage and who you're married to and how many wives you have or don't have and how many children you have or don't have and what their names are and social security numbers and whether or not they've got social security numbers or not, you know, that's all Fourth Amendment protected information. So we were talking about the Fourth Amendment, and this young fella comes in about 7:30. Not only was he late by a couple of days, he was late that night. So when he came in, a little bolt of inspiration struck me, and as he sat down, there's probably 60, 80 people in the class. I used to teach big classes in those days. I don't anymore, but I used to do that. And the ballroom was full. And he apologized when he came in because he disrupted the class. And I said, it's quite all right. This gentleman here is Mr. Matt Johnson from Boise Cascade. So I introduced him to everybody. And I said, Matt, since you're a little late, there's some information that we need to get that we got from everybody else earlier, but we need to get it from you now. Would that be all right with you, Matt? And he said, oh, yes, yes, of course. So I said, all right, now, boys and girls, let's just take a little break here, and let's take a little instruction. And I said, what's your full name? And he said, my name is Matthew Elliott Johnson. I said, okay, Matt. And I said, what's your social security number? And he recited it right off the top of his head. And I said, your address? And he gave us his address. And I said, are you married? And he said, yes. And I said, and what's your wife's name? And he said, Mary. And I said, what's your wife's maiden name? And he told us. And I said, what's your wife's social security number? And he said he didn't know, but that he would find out and bring it in. I said, would you please? And he said he would. He promised. And I said, where do you work? And he told me, Boise Cascade. And I said, how long have you worked there? And he said, 14 years. And I said, what do you do there? And he says, I'm a salesman. And I said, what is your average monthly take-home pay? And he told us. And I kept asking him questions, personal questions. If I would have asked him if he used Preparation H on his hemorrhoids, he would have told us. All I had to do is ask him. He would have told us. And about this time, the other members of the class could not contain themselves. And they started laughing openly. And the young man looked around at all these people laughing, and what they were laughing at was him, because I had already told these people, you Americans will tell anybody everything about yourselves, all of the personal information. You will tell us your credit card numbers. All I have to do is ask you over the telephone for your credit card number, and you'll tell me. You do it all the time. All I have to do is ask you on the telephone, a total stranger 2,000 miles away, when he asks you what your social security number is, you'll tell him, and then you wonder why there's identity theft. My God, have we taken leave of our senses? Are we a nation of imbeciles? So the young man stopped right there. He looked around. And I said, Matt, you have just demonstrated for everybody in the class what I have been telling you from day one. You were programmed from the first grade on to waive your Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your person, houses, papers, and effects. Every question that I asked you is personal information that nobody can get from you, nobody could compel from you, that is specifically protected by your Fourth Amendment right and your Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. And I ask you these questions, and you volunteered it, not just to me, but to everybody else here in public. And yes, the young man felt foolish. Had I asked these questions of the other students? No. No. I don't ask people when they come to school here what their social security number is. Hell, I've gone to school here and finished school, and people have gone home, called me on the telephone and said, do you remember me? And I said, what's your name? He'll tell me his name. I said, did you go to school here? I don't even know what your names are, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't really care. You pay your money, you come to school. We don't need to have any information from you. I don't need to know your name, address, and telephone number. I don't need to know whether you use Preparation H. I respect the Fourth Amendment. I respect people's privacy. You know, I've never asked a person for his address unless I intended to write him a letter. In fact, when somebody asks me, Mr. Gordon, what is your address? I always ask them, are you going to write me a letter? Almost invariably, they'll look at me and say no. So, well, then why do you want my address if you're not going to write to me? They want to know, what's your phone number? I say, are you going to call me? And they look at you and they say, no. Why do you want my phone number if you're not going to call me? And they say, well, it's on the form. And so the people that are asking the questions because they're on the form. It's my job. My job is to ask you your name, address, and telephone number. Okay. Ask away. But I don't have any duty to tell you what my name, address, and telephone number is. I don't have any duty to tell you what my social security number or credit card numbers or whether I'm married or whether I have children and what their ages are. I don't have any duty to confer this information on you. As a matter of fact, boys and girls, it's none of your damn business. Can I be plainer than that? It's none of your damn business. And it's nobody's damn business in the government either. Now, of course, if you want to tell them, there's nothing wrong with that. One time I went into a doctor's office. I've related this story two or three times. I won't belabor the issue, but my wife broke her ankle and she needed a little help, and I went over to this clinic. And this young girl, and I'm sure she's a sweet young thing, you know, I've got daughters, you know, that are sweet young things. Godfathers love their daughters, even the dumb ones. And this young girl came over with a clipboard with a piece of paper on it, and she says, "Oh, Mr. Gordon, would you fill this out?" I looked up at her and I smiled and I said, "I would be delighted to fill this out for you." And the first thing it wants to know is, "What's your name?" Did you know that the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person? Did you know that your name is a part of your person? Did you know that you don't have any duty to tell anybody your name, whether it's George Gordon or John Finkelstein or Harry Wolf or IP Daily? It's nobody's damn business what your name is, unless just out of courtesy or just out of, I just want to be friendly and I want you to call me by this particular name. You know, I could say to you, you walk in the door and you say, "Hi, what's your name?" "My name is Harry Finkelstein." What difference does it make to you whether my name is George Gordon, Harry Finkelstein, or George Johnson? You know, what's the big deal? Now, it happens that I already told her my name was George Gordon, so I wrote in the blank where it said name George Gordon. And then it said social security number. And I knew exactly what that was, and I wrote N-O-N-E on that blank, social security number, N-O-N-E. And I went through and answered every question on the form on both sides, 8.5 by 11. Hell, it must have been 50, 75 questions. I don't know how many. I didn't count them, but there's a bunch. Bunch of questions. And every one of you listening to me right now has seen that very same form. You've been to doctor's offices and insurance companies and dentist's clinics and so on, or you've gone into the bank or somebody, and they always ask you the same information. And you have given this information out so often to so many people, it has become second nature. Nobody ever explained to you that the Fourth and Fifth Amendments of your Constitution, which were bled for, I mean Americans bled and died to protect you from having to give that kind of information, and you blithely go out there and give the information and don't even ask why. Now, the reason I'm telling you this story over here is because the Idaho birth certificate worksheet for parents, this comes in the hospital. When you go into the hospital, ladies, they're going to hand you this form, and this form says child's name, first, last, and middle. It says date of birth, mother's current or legal name, mother's date of birth, mother's usual residence in the state, county, street, address, inside the city limits, father's name, father's date of birth, social security number. And then there's a little note here. It says that inclusion of parent social security number is required as a part of public law 100-485. This information is strictly confidential, and it may be released to the Idaho Child Support Agency if an official child support action regarding this child has been initiated. Well, listen, if you are anticipating an official child support action regarding this child at some time in the future, well, you probably ought to fill this out and give them your social security number. But there is not a question on this form that has any legal requirement that you give to this hospital. There's no legal requirement that you get a birth certificate. There's no law or legal requirement that requires you to pass your seed through the fire to Moloch in violation of Leviticus 20 verses 1 through 5, which is a capital felony. There's no law that requires you to do that. But that's what this Idaho birth certificate worksheet for parents is for. It is an inducement to you to violate the law of God at Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. You are in the process of passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. Will you voluntarily give this child to Baal? And of course, all Americans say, yes, yes, I will give my child to Baal. Let me pass my seed through the fire to Moloch. I feel real religious today. And I want to tell you, this is religious. Boys and girls, this birth certificate is nothing but religious. So all of you people out there that are anti-Christian and anti-religious, can you please tell me why you get marriage licenses so that you can do this marriage, this religious act with the state? Can you tell me why you pass your children through the fire to Moloch and give them to Baal? I mean, you people that claim to be unreligious and you're clamoring for a separation of church and state. I mean, you can't get any closer and get any further into bed with religion than to make a covenant with a foreign and alien god like California, for crying out loud. I mean, this is a guardian ward relationship of the most sacred nation or nature when you get a guardianship of your children. I mean, why in the hell don't you own your children, boys and girls? Aren't you adults? Aren't you competent? Aren't you capable? Well, anybody with a birth certificate is not competent or capable. Anyone with a marriage license obviously isn't competent or capable, either legally or financially. And that's why you get these licenses. It's so that the state will come in here and give you unemployment insurance and workman's compensation and give you free public education for all children in public school, the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. So the next time you go to the hospital, why don't you just think about these words? And when somebody hands you this form and says, would you tell us your child's name? Why don't you ask them, why do you want to know? Who told you that I've come up with a name for my child yet? Now, if you'll take a look here at parens patriae in American jurisprudence, where we're talking about the respective rights of the parents, the name of the child is section 13, and the undoubted right of a parent to name his child is one of which he cannot be deprived without his consent. The voluntary relinquishment of such right therefore constitutes a valid and sufficient consideration for a contract, and such a contract, where it is made for the benefit of the child, is enforceable by it. The question as to whether a mother who has custody can change the child's surname over the father's objection is dealt with elsewhere. When you want to name your child, boys and girls, you have the power to do that, and you don't have to reveal that name to anybody else, including the nurse in the hospital. Well, unless you want to. Most Americans have never thought to tell the nurse in the hospital to get lost. It's none of your damn business, and I'm not telling you. I'll pay you the bill for the services rendered. What my maiden name is, what my child's father's name is, what my address is, my telephone number and social security number is none of your damn business. Now get the hell out of here. You ever thought about that? I mean, that'd be a wild conversation with the nurse in the hospital, wouldn't it? Try it sometime. I think you'll have a lot of fun. Next time, I'm going to show you a letter from the Department of Social Services written to one of my students over here. I won't tell you what his name was. I want to protect his privacy, but his name is Randy. And he had this very same problem with school marm. Social lady wrote him a letter and said, school marm is complaining because you're not sending your child to public school. And a lot of times, people will call the law school and they'll say, oh, my God, I've got problems here with the school marm and social lady. What am I going to do? Next time, I'm going to tell you. Here's what you do with school marm and social lady. Remembering, of course, that this child belongs to the state. You gave them to the state. But that doesn't mean that you don't have some say, some custody, some control over the child. But you need to know where the lines are drawn in the sand. And next time when we're talking about school marm and social lady, I'll show you where those letters or those lines are drawn in the sand. Hey, we're out of time. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Don't miss yours. To order it, call the law school at 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. The worst thing you can say is that this is a piece of trash, and then throw it out. That's the worst. Otherwise, it's free of charge. Remember that all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date, and that the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave. See you tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.